As per tradition, we always start recording at 9 o'clock.
Oh, okay.
And it will stop at 10 o'clock. It's having some technical problems. Okay.
Okay, so you know, people will get to listen to all our wrestling with technical problems in the beginning.
We had one where the person who was supposed to come on didn't show up till like they're like 5 minutes late or something like that. So we just pretended to have the interview with them.
Ask questions and nothing but silence comes back.
I'll give the intro while we're waiting. This is Strange Murmurings. This is just a fun little show where we sit and we talk to creators and such, and we let you pimp your wares, and we ask a lot of questions.
Don't lie about the fun part, Melkor.
What, the pimping?
No, the fun part.
Oh, right.
Okay, so Ben is wrestling with technical issues, so I think I'm flying solo until he can get those unraveled.
Okay. That works. Can he not join the audio channel?
For some reason, he's not getting the audio and audio with Discord at the moment. He's going to do the first rule of troubleshooting, and then that's to reboot. We'll see where that goes.
Very true. That's actually my my day job is the tech support. Did you try restarting it?
Yes.
You'd be surprised. No one ever says no, it wasn't plugged in. They say, okay, I got it. Thanks. They hang up. All right. So yeah, what were we in for Ben? Give us some info about Virtual Rasa, because I'm excited about this, because the VTT options are kind of slim. They all have their good points and bad points, and we knock Roll 20 like crazy, but we're kind of hooked on Roll 20.
Okay. Well, first of all, paste the link into Virtual Rasa on the chat for anybody who happens to be watching along. Virtual Rasa is at the moment, purely web-based virtual tabletop. We kind of took the design philosophy that tabletop gaming is fun because you have a bunch of people around the table. And what we want to do is we want to make the people who can't make it to the table, bring them into the experience. So one thing we found with a lot of virtual tabletops in the past, the ones we fiddled with, and this I will confess, we have not looked closely at the current offerings. This was like when we started, you know, years back. A lot of them feel like they're trying to take a video game and make it a role-playing game. Get a very complicated, very, at times, very polished graphical interface, but it's more like playing a video game than it is like playing a tabletop role-playing game. Our goal here was kind of more to be essentially a virtual tabletop. It's very much the 2D map that you see in front of you. That is the main, the main thing. That's your game map that would be in front of you on the table. Then we have some camera integration, which I can show you in a little bit. If you have a physical table, physical map on your table, we can overlay that with, you know, the corrections so the squares more or less line up. So that's kind of the basic goal there, is to, you know, be a virtual table, not a virtual world, I guess. Like a lot of them try to do the full 3D immersive, you know, almost World of Warcraft quality stuff sometimes. And we might do that someday, but anyways, I should let you ask more questions. I'm just kind of rambling.
No, that's right. Yeah, I mean, it's your time. I want to know about it. I mean, I've said it since day one. I'm impressed by it. I like it, especially.
Thank you.
My experience mostly has been with Roll20 and with Fantasy Grounds, and Fantasy Grounds kind of has the same, like you were saying, it's almost video gamey. It doesn't take away too much from the tabletop. But it's really like there's a lot more automation. Same thing with Roll20. Roll20 is it takes part of the game away because it's all I mean, I don't mind it, especially if you're GMing, you've got like a million character sheets. It's easy to push a button, but you kind of lose the flavor of, you know, knowing what your stats are and other things like that. Like, do you have plans on integrating, system character sheets, like putting 5e or any systems like that?
I kind of what we're leaning there. We don't really want to tie you to any particular game system. What we're thinking of doing is put like wiki templates in. So you could have a 5e template. So you could fill out the character sheet there. Okay. And you could create your own template. So if you've got a game system we've not heard of, you can just create a template and, you know, have your people fill it out.
We also want to integrate into that the idea that your the dice roller and chat and various things can look at that wiki page and try to figure out certain things. Right now, we have a dice roller, as you know, requested on a previous podcast, but it just rolls dice. What I really want to do is I want to say /roll initiative. It'll look at my unit. It figures out that I have a character sheet. It'll look at my character sheet and figure out there's a thing I've called initiative with a special markup tag that we're going to figure out and roll your initiative.
Yeah, I thought I saw that, and maybe I'm wrong, but did I see a spot for initiative on there already?
There is a spot for you to enter your own, but it is not in any sense automated. Okay. It supports initiative tracking as a benefit to the GM, but the idea here is that players roll initiative any way they want, with real dice, with a dice roller, by saying 20, you know, whatever works for them. And then they put that number into initiative, and the GM can hit a reset button that reorders all the tokens so that you have this list of the initiative order, and then you can go through it more easily.
That's very cool. I was just, I had just been introduced to the wiki. Explain the wiki a little bit more. I mean, that's,
At the moment, it's just kind of a basic wiki. It's not super fancy. It uses Markdown. It supports uploading, JPEG, PNG, and GIF. If you're one of us, we can also upload SVGs, which are like the background you see on the demo world. That's an SVG. There's some security issues with SVGs that we have to basically put a bunch of effort into sanitization before we can open that up to everybody. SVGs are nice because they scale really well.
One of the things that we really like about the wiki, aside from being a good place to store your map backgrounds or as a file repository, is the idea that you can do things like put character sheets in there. There's some kind of metadata that we can store in the wiki. And so that way, for example, if you have your map with particular settings that we're working out right now that Jeff is busy putting the background, the backing store into, you can do stuff to a map image, and it'll save those changes persistently in the wiki. And if a world has a wiki, we know that there are certain things that are going to come with it. We're going to support putting a world description in the wiki that everybody can see, that shows up in various places around the site. We're sort of going to glue integration in so that things that could be in the wiki get presented to users automatically. And if they're not there, a sensible default appears. But if they are there, you know, your world description, or a list of players, or a list of cameras, or a list of character sheets, or GM text. We want support to have the idea of secret GM text for, you know, the monster's actual hit points, let's say. But public text of, this creature has 8 arms and 400 teeth, and it wants to eat you, yum, yum, yum. Or, you know, whatever.
We already have some of that. Wiki pages can be GM only.
That's right.
Read-only for the players, or you can have pages that are read-write by the players.
We want to put in addition to that are mixed, where there's information the GM can see, so that he has the same page open the players do, as opposed to having 2 pages open.
I like that, yeah.
And any plans to integrate a dice roller, or
There's a basic dice roller in there already.
Oh, I didn't see it.
Yeah, if you do /roll d6.
Do /roll v, it's even better. /roll v, 18d20.
Nice. Can you do... I just want to put it in there. Can you do like mathematics equations on there? So like 2d20 plus 1d4?
Yeah, so a certain limited amount for like the roll d8 plus 4. If you do roll v... If you do roll V, it'll give you the actual, the individual dice.
I can't remember if we can do a D8 plus a D6 or not. Let's find out.
It's not, no, that doesn't work.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, I didn't want to have to write a full-blown math parser for this. So, yeah, this is what I could do with a one-line regular expression. And once you get that complicated, it's, you know, you're writing
it. I should go into it. We can do it with a for loop in the regex. Stupid technical babble. I should go hit the back end with a stick and let it support 1d8 plus 1d6.
Pour water on it.
Yeah, well, yeah. Someday we will add that. We will add more sophistication. I just want to make... We do need to be careful. I don't think we want to make the dice roller a programming language.
We don't necessarily want to support exploding dice yet, because it's very game-specific. We don't want to auto-support critical rolls yet, because that's very game-specific, and indeed very weapon-specific in Pathfinder, for example.
Right.
Actually, I think once we get to that level of complexity in the dice roller, the best way to deal with that is we'll eventually have an API where people can, register their own services, and they could create their own custom dice rollers for very. So, if say Earthdawn has that exploding dice scheme, at least the version of Earthdawn I played over a decade ago, and that would almost want to be a custom plugin.
Oh, definitely. We're in agreement. I was saying we're probably not going to implement in the back end exploding dice or auto confirms or anything like that. I can see an argument for a D20 plus a D6, especially with roll V.
Exploding dice. The point I want to make is we do have a plan to make a plugin interface. Where people could customize their own, they could write their own robots.
Sure.
They could also do things like investigate wiki pages or all that kind of business too.
Yeah, so sort of like what you were saying, having like a character sheet template, kind of have the have the custom, like if you did like a 5e, you know, you'd have the you could put the like the critical, you know, when you get the d20 or 2d20 or.
And the advantage disadvantage thing 5e has.
Yeah.
And or we could have
it could be automated.
Yeah, we could automate the 4e advantage disadvantage mechanic, that kind of thing too. But I think that's definitely a robot.
We have kind of a back end idea that we should create kind of a rules template. Template isn't the right word because it's more complicated than that, where you could have these kind of customizations in by game system. Although at the moment, we really want to make sure it is game system independent. We don't want to like lock somebody into, well, this doesn't work too well because, you know,
we play a lot of D20 games, and I don't want to, this isn't just a D20 tabletop. This is an RPG tabletop.
Yeah, like that when you calculate move distances, you can do the 1-2 for diagonals, or you can do the 1-1 for diagonals. People have very strong opinions about that one way or the other. I actually have a strong opinion myself, but I feel anybody should be able to play it however they wish. So.
I actually even have goals to make the squares not necessarily 5 feet wide, although that's lower on our priority because most games use 5 foot squares.
That's actually already in there. If you go into the pages where you customize the map, you can change them from 5 feet.
Live and learn. See, there's so much cool stuff there that I don't even know at all.
Right. Are you going to make hex support?
I really want hex support. I've already started penciling in hexes. I'm drawing them programmatically, which is simple, you know, trigonometry, geometry. Figuring out where to drop a token is annoying because there's a staggered 1-2-1-2 thing happening. But once I get around to putting in figuring out which hex you've landed on, we'll have hex support basically ready to go.
And with all the API stuff you're saying you're going to include, I was noting earlier how smoothly this runs for a browser software. Do you think you'll encounter the same kind of like bloat that everyone comes to associate with Roll20? Where you're in immediately and it's already slowing down?
I haven't used Roll20, so I don't know about it. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with it. I mean, we We've actually gone very lightweight in terms of the various libraries and whatnot, just because those libraries add layer upon layer. I mean, I see this in a lot of websites. I've not delved into Roll20, but a lot of websites, you know, they go in and they use React, and there's just...
It's very maintainable.
It's faster development because you don't have to spend as much time fiddling with the browser details.
But the cost
seems to be a lot of performance issues.
Mm-hmm.
You're basically, in many cases, if I understand how React works correctly, you're duplicating a lot of the Java the browser layout in JavaScript.
Another component of that is it does depend a lot on your browser and your computer. One of my older computers running Firefox is significantly slower than one of my newer computers running Chrome. And that's not supposed to be a dig on Firefox. I use Firefox a lot and really like it, and we do target it. But some of that benefit is because you have a better computer than you could. A lot of it is because we spend a lot of time, as Jeff says, trying to not load a bunch of stuff, duplicate what the browser is doing. We try to use native built-in JavaScript as much as possible because it's faster.
Do you think you ever might take a, I guess, user-friendly approach to essentially ticking off what actual APIs that come with the program that you want to use instead of just dumping everything in there? Because the GM knows, based on the game they're playing, like what they'll need probably.
You mean as in terms of the various features that are surfaced?
Yeah.
Like maybe the GM could say we do or do not want chat, or these are the things we care about our units, so don't show us the others.
We've definitely had requests for things like, even though, you know, I just said that, you know, we all worlds have wikis, we've had requests that, you know, I really don't like the idea that I could have one, so please hide that. Even if it's there, if you don't tell me about it, I'll be a happier person. And I think that to some degree, we ought to support that.
Stick to my spiral notebooks. Don't make me cheat on myself.
Yeah. I think what we need there is we need kind of a sense of what people care about, what they want to hide and what they don't want to hide.
You have an electronic dice roller and you want to turn it off. You know, I can understand that you might not want your players using it.
Yeah. The danger you have here is saying any one feature should be enableable or disableable is great. But once you start adding them all up together, it suddenly becomes this nest of options that becomes very hard for people to use. So it's kind of like we want to have the ability to customize the interface for people, but the customization has to be user friendly. If we give you 50 options to turn things on and off,
horrible.
That's going to be horrible. So we have to really kind of pick, I think, maybe like the top 10 issues that people have strong feelings about whether they do or do not want, and kind of limit it to that so that it's a manageable set of configurations for people.
So, for example, we have about 3 noises that it makes right now. Noise when someone connects, noise when someone chats, noise when someone disconnects. And they all have the same toggle.
Crisp page turn.
They all have the same toggle. If you turn off any one sound, you say, I don't want this to make noise at me. Because, it would be cool if I could specify a warping in noise for a player and a wah, 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 wah when they leave. And I hate the page crinkle noise because it makes me think that my cat's eating my paper, so I want something, or, you know, whatever. But that's too much rope. That's going to start adding just tons of UI to change this trivial feature. And if someone hates the page crinkle noise, then they're going to hate it. And I think that we have to live with that for now.
One place where we've already tangled with this and kind of dialed back the complexity, there's user account access. You can create a world, and you'll be the GM of your world, and then you can have people who connect, and they you can grant them player access, and they'll have players. And players have less access to the world than the game master. The players will, by default, have one unit that they can move, while the GM can move any unit. And we originally had a much more complex, fine-grained user access control scheme. And some of it's still in there because it's useful. Like the GM can give players additional units to move. But the problem you have here is if you get too complicated, you get this fine-grained control of options that no human being can sort out what's going to happen.
It's way too confusing. And if you're getting confused by it, you know, God help someone who hasn't used the software for the last year.
Yeah, so it's kind of like I really do want to make it customizable to the way people want it to work. So if you do want to turn off certain features, but I need to kind of group that into something that people can wrap their heads around. So I guess I'm kind of answering your question is yes, we want to do that, but we really have to approach it carefully.
We're really thinking broad strokes. Whenever we can gang something together as an idea, we do. Said, you know, if it turns out that, you know, people are listening to this podcast, log on and, you know, there's this one thing that, you know, half the people love it and half the people hate it. And we hear this kind of mixed response from people, you know, that responses are good. Information like that is great. And we can add a checkbox. You know, I don't object to adding a thing. What I object to is adding 500 things because 500 people have 500 opinions.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like you can't, yeah. I mean, does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. It answers like how much of a concern it is and why it can't be like a main focus. And I don't know, maybe if.
I mean, is there like a specific thing you see here? You say I'd kind of like this disabled.
Actually, I'm kind of wondering. Would you have plans to? Roll20 has this dynamic lighting engine, which can be great for immersion. And absolutely make everything slow down if they don't have a great connection. With tile revealing, how might you do you have any plans for blocking off player vision?
Kicking that around a lot. That sort of vision. So a little bit of background. A lot of our VTT experience is intentionally blind to what people are doing right now. We don't use Fantasy Grounds. We don't use Roll20 because I don't want to inadvertently copy something they're doing in my mind, totally innocently, but because I saw it there and thought that was really cool and forgot where I saw it. Our background is from things like MapTool from, you know, eons ago. And MapTool had a really neat vision blocking layer that I really want to do. And it's terrible for GMs to implement. It was picky and pixel precise and horrible to use. And after the first time you did it, you decided you were never doing that again. And I'm working on a different sort of reveal that is much lighter weight, where essentially you can block off squares at a time so that the GM can see it, so that he knows what's in the next room without having to, you know, peek on the map in some other window. But the players can't. And that sort of very lightweight vision blocking of the door is closed, you can't see in the room. Oh, you're coming in the room, I'll reveal it. We really want to do. And that seems pretty light and pretty simple, and I don't think it's going to kill user experience. The idea of your token can see this, but you're around the corner, so you can't see that square, and my token can see this thing, but I am on the other side of the map, so I can't see you guys at all. That's a little beyond us right now. We're not really reaching
for that. I mean, there's kind of a question there for you, as, you know, when you're GMing, how important is having this dynamic lighting and vision blocking layer for you?
Room reveal is usually important because the question of what's on the other side of this door and player reactions to
this
room
is
cool.
Yes.
But I don't particularly much care about like if you're on an over map and say that there's a fight in what should normally be a map where the players are just moving their things around to go on a shopping spree or something, but they end up fighting a gang. Like if you have good players, you know that they're not going to be like, well, I'm going to decide I see through this wall, even though my character can't technically do that.
I'm going to run around the corner.
Yeah.
Yep.
I will note that we have one feature already that I basically run our weekly games at the moment. I'm the GM. And as the GM, you can tag a bunch of units as inactive, which means they are not visible to the players, but you can see them yourself. So the way I currently run things is I will, like if you were going to, on the other side of the door, all of the units in that room would be labeled as inactive, so the players can't see them on the map at all. And when they open the door, I will then make them all active because now they're visible.
And that's a way to represent like stealth or invisible units.
Yes. Actually, we have two things for that. So in Tekninga, our demo game world, I just made one of the units for one of the players inactive. and it is no longer visible. It's right in front of the door. I've circled it with our, you know, John Madden whiteboarding tool thing there, and I'm about to try to put it back as soon as I figure out where I've hidden it. There we go. And right there is an inactive unit in front of the door circled, and then I'm going to make it visible again. And for those of you who are in real time and live, boom, a new unit just appeared in front of the Doc Garrison building. The other thing we can do with stuff like that is we can have a player declare that they're stealthing. And so what we're going to do with that is we have a token condition where you can say that you're hidden. And this is relying on the players to, you know, do the right thing there. It fades out the token. And we don't do anything like you're hidden to this player, but not to that player. Or, you know, this thing can see you, but that can't. And so we present differential views. We don't do any of that. But we do
that,
do.
That does kind of solve one of the forever problems with the Scout Rogue. Is the DM is like, you're about to walk into an encounter, and the DM is like, okay, are you sneaking or are you just walking? And they're like,
I can't remember. Are you stealthing or not?
I'm sneaking because you asked.
I've been stealthing for the last hour. I'm glad you asked.
My knees are really sore from crawling everywhere.
I think that'll actually be, I don't know if you guys follow the Pathfinder 2nd edition, but I think that's actually a big part of that is if you're, what do they call it? Like exploration mode. If you're not in an encounter, you kind of have to keep track of what your character is doing as far as like what your initiative role would be. So it is important for the player to keep track of whether or not they're stealthing or what they're doing. Yeah. So stuff like that would work really well with it.
I like exposing the idea that the player can control whether their token is stealth. They can control their initiative role. It takes a lot of work off the GM, who's not constantly doing data entry, because it paralyzes labor. Mm-hmm. And it lets things like what you're talking about in Pathfinder 2e happen, where I put my initiative in. It's already there. We're done. Or whatever.
Yep. Yeah. So actually, you mentioned the John Madden thing. We hadn't talked about that. So we have some gesture, basically John Madden-style things. If you do shift-click, you'll put up that arrow, and if you do shift click drag, you'll basically draw on the screen. So this is a way for people to kind of scribble and point and say, I want to look over there or whatever, basically, scribble and whatnot. And we're pondering putting additional stuff in over time. It's kind of like, what do people want? This is, you know, found it rather useful.
We've gotten requests for things like text editing. We've gotten requests for things like, you know, basically a full-blown MS Paint. And we're trying to back off on that one because this application isn't all things to all people. This isn't Photoshop. And yeah. I understand.
Since I don't think anyone is logged in as a game master, you're not seeing the toolbox.
Melkor has in his world, I think.
In my experience,
I'll demo the toolbox over here in the sense of I'll do some things with it right now. I want to put in a tree. And so I'm going to drop a tree next to that TDTD unit right there. And it's a super cool tree, right? Like it's a green hexagon. But we have things like, you know, I can put in a brick wall.
Yeah, we have other art, and we're gradually increasing the art assets as we go.
One of the things we're trying to do with art is limit how much of it we show to a player at once. Because mm-hmm. if I show you 10,000 icons, that's horrible. You'll never find the one you want. Maybe we can break them up into categories. Things like, you know, room decorations, you know, roads, you know, whatever. But we're sort of working our way through what art should exist.
In a certain sense, a lot of what we have at this moment is kind of based on my GM style, in that I have a tendency, every now and then I will do something like this map that we're looking at, which was a city or a town. It's actually a very small area when you think about it, that I created for a campaign. And I went to the trouble of doing this. But usually when I do things is, I never worry too much about vision blocking layers because I don't often know where the buildings are until the encounter happens. And then I start putting them on the map as I go.
If we go, the thing I've been doing a lot, so I use this tool. I use this too with my nephew. We have a D&D game. And, you know, at times there are things like they run off the map. And, you know, we go way over to one side or whatever and nothing's happening. And so I'm going to move down into the sort of tan area in the docks. I'm like, oh, no, you know, there's a boat right here because I said there was going to be a boat. And so I draw in, you know, I sketch something in real quick. and, you know, that's the gangplank right there that I'm sketching kind of stuff or whatever. And you can play on that because I just got out my marker and drew on the map. It supports that level of ad hocery as well as rewarding you for planning ahead and having whatever map you want uploaded or whatever.
Yeah, obviously, if you put a lot of trouble into creating a nice looking map, you can upload that and use that.
Yeah, I mean, I was just showing the picture I posted there, just how easy I went onto the wiki, just uploaded it. And it's a it's a 24 by 30 map. So I threw it in there, created the map, changed the dimensions to 24 by 30, and everything's lined up and it's perfect. It looks great.
Awesome. I'm so glad. Cool.
Wow, that is great. That is fabulous. I think that's fabulous feedback to see that it was just so straightforward for you to set that up.
Preparing an encounter and preparing like a map encounter before I even get to the tokens or anything, half of it is because I don't get the pixels like never 1-to-1, even if I have the square count correctly.
Okay, so we should talk about the camera.
Not with your program, but with Roll20, is the grid's not lining up correctly? Because like I might have a map with a grid, but then there's a grid overlay for the thing that the tokens are actually going to lock to.
I've noticed that Python's maps are often not square, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, let me, so let's talk about that, because this kind of fades into the camera stuff.
Do you have the camera on, Jeff?
I have the camera on, and...
That ice house is your camera right now. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, it's in the map feed. Let's pull, let's see here. Let me warp everybody over to the feed world. Nope, that's not the so we can see that.
And I'm going to save and set to you again. So one of the things the GM can do, which we ripped off from Map Tool, is you can force the players to a view for a period of time. You can't constantly do it because that's a little too much. But you can say, hey, guys, come look at this thing. And for everyone who's, you know, playing live with us right now on Techninga, I've set the view to look at Jeff's camera.
All right. Let's move over to feed.
If you have, and Jeff is working on doing this with images too, which is addressing what you've just asked about. We already implemented it for real world cameras, and the math is very similar for still art, which is the idea that you can say, as long as the art is reasonably regular, you know, if your art is bent in some way and it doesn't actually have any straight lines, we're not really going to be able to help that a lot. Mm-hmm. But if it's mostly straight lines, you can do things like say, here's a corner, and here's another corner that is, you don't know this because you're a human and not a computer, 718 pixels away. And that is 44 squares, and I'm going to assume 718 is not a multiple of 44. Our software doesn't care.
So, Ben, I don't know where you got off to. I'm not seeing you in either map, so you're going to have to get yourself over to the camera feed.
World are we in?
We're in Techninga. We're in Techninga. The map feed, which I believe I've moved everybody who's connected in anonymously.
Thinks I'm on feed. Let me hit reload.
Yeah. So you can see this. We're doing a perspective correction. My camera right now is basically pointed at a rather clunky 45 degree angle. And we basically tell it where the corners of the map are and how big it is, and we do the fix. Now, one of the things you'll notice is that the minifigs and the ice house pieces are kind of overlaying the adjacent squares because we're at such a sharp angle.
Can you turn off the correction for a second, Jeff, to show them how bad the image really is?
That's actually surprisingly hard to do. But what I can do is I should be able to give a link to the...
Of course, to the camera page.
Yes, to the camera page. It is possible to do. See here. Boy, I've forgotten.
In the world menu, at the top, it says Virtual Rasa, Share Your World, and there's a little globe. Underneath the globe is a menu dropdown, and under the globe should be a link for cameras. And if you click that, you should get a new window.
Yeah, no, they don't. Well, you can do. They should look at that because they may want to do it themselves, but that's not going to get them what we want to equal. Here we go. I got the link.
Okay, you go.
I'll paste it in Discord because that's where most people are looking at this.
I'll paste it in Techninga because why not?
Is this gonna, yeah, it's not gonna, oh, it is. Oh yeah, there you go. In Discord, you can actually see, that is the uncorrected image that I'm getting from the camera. Hopefully there's nothing embarrassing in my living room right at the moment.
I don't see anything inappropriate. I don't even see her cat.
Yeah, well, she's hiding under the bed. I think
that's the exact image you're using for the map.
That is the raw feed from the camera.
Move a minifig.
I will do that in a moment. I need to get up from the table. That is the raw feed that we are correcting. We pull an image every second. I will move my one painted mini I happen to have handy. There.
As you can see,
so you see it's kind of a jerky movement.
Which is intentional.
One thing is when you do video feeds, usually they reduce the frame, or to keep the frame rate up, they reduce the resolution. The problem is a camera feed that is at 320 by 240 because the bandwidth is so poor is kind of useless. You need the resolution so you can actually see what's on the map. So what we do is we pull a 1080p image or whatever your camera supports every second. So you're not going to get smooth animation, but when you're looking at a map like this, you don't really want smooth animation. You want a clear picture.
Yeah, you're making instantaneous game piece moves.
Right.
It's not like you're talking to the camera.
And that's why we have these special, like if you look at my unit here, the J. Olheft unit, it's actually a box with a label. That's the outline shape, and that's deliberate so that you can basically put it on top of a unit on the screen so that you can basically track things as they move around. And so if somebody were to move a box unit, I could then get up and I would move the physical token. So that's how somebody who was remote would indicate they want their unit moved.
So, for example, you know, I just changed mine to an outline. I'm like, I want to be over there. Jeff could go grab one of those green icehouse pieces, plop it on where I move my token to.
Yeah, now this takes a little finicky. Did I get it right? Nope, I'm off by one. I'm diagonally off by one.
Yeah. So one of the things I did to solve that, which is a different way of playing and required some, you know, upfront work on my part, was I made a light table. So someone moves their thing, and I don't have to sort of look between my screen and the map because the map is the screen. And not everybody necessarily wants to go through all the work of projecting their map onto a table or the wall or whatever. But
although these days, if you can put a monitor or a TV face up,
it becomes an amazing tabletop.
Mm.
But even with just on a laptop monitor or a TV,
if you have a touch screen, we do have fairly complete support for touch screen, so you can just touch and drag your units around.
We have waypoint support. If you long press on an area, or if you hit space while you're dragging it, or you know, a couple of other ways of triggering it. Instead of just going in a single straight line, I can bend corners and that kind of thing. And take a weird, crazy path.
Right. I was going to ask about that. One thing I accidentally did, and I can't figure out how to replicate that, is to draw a path without having a token.
If you double-click a unit, that's one of the ways you can move a unit. Instead of drag and drop, is either long press or double-click.
You didn't have a unit on this map, and yet you still made a path?
No, he got a path. He got the measurement thing as he was dragging. We still have the when the map is not centered at 0, 0.
Off by one, I saw that. I just saw that.
Off by one. Yeah, I can. I can fix that at the camera, because what it is the camera's border is putting in the negative coordinates. So let me just turn that off right now.
Yes, if you double-click your unit and you start planning a move, two things happen in terms of that. I'll talk about this while Jeff messes with the camera. Is there two shades of gray. That's what the game thinks is a single move and a double move, which I admit is game terminology and fairly game-specific, but we didn't think it hurt too much. And there's also a little black line that moves with your mouse cursor in case you can't see. You want to go way further than double move. You're running, you're going four times, or you're really measuring a huge distance. This is a little game ruler that pops up on the map.
You get that by double clicking or long pressing your unit, which I believe is what was Melkor's question there.
Yeah, that's what it was. Like I said, I completely accidentally did it, and I was like, what the hell's going on? I couldn't figure it out, but yeah.
Escape gets you out of that, by the way.
Yeah. If you double-click, you can then click individual waypoints, and then finally double-click at your destination, which I believe somebody's noticed one way of doing that, yes.
Yeah, it was one thing I noticed, I think the first time I went on there, I really liked the how you have that, like you had said, you've got the double move and the single move action, so it kind of gives you a range as you're going. Now, is that something that's customizable?
Yeah, there's a movement entry in the unit details.
I'm not sure you guys can edit it, actually, because... go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, I think they're coming in as... Melkar, are you logged in?
No, I think I'm in as a guest on this one. But yeah, I do see
when you're logged in, which I'll tell you guys about, but you can't see, there is a editor to the right of the unit that has some quick stuff you can do, like you can set your initiative very easily, or you can change whether or not you're hidden very quickly. And then there's another thing that lets you set a bunch more variables about your unit, which we've hidden, and there are too many things there, going back to our thing about choices and options. One of them is movement. And the map chooses how big to make that circle based on how much you've told it you can move.
So, Melkar, are you seeing a button under the specs column?
It looks like three lines.
Under the specs column.
He's probably not, because he's coming in. You know what? I'm going to add him as a player.
Okay. He's in his Melkor. I see him right here.
Yeah, no, I just made him an official player of the, the game. So he should be able to edit his unit now. You may need to reload the page if you're not seeing the specs button.
Yeah, I can see, like, if I double click on it, it brings me up like a little menu. You've got background, foreground, you get the icon.
Right.
That's the same thing you get to from the specs button. And you can do things like you can change your icon, you can change your color, you can say how far out you need to move. So right now you're set to 30, and I'm just going to arbitrarily set you to 50. You're the only person who's going to be able to see this. But your circle should now be almost twice as big.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's very cool. Now, are you, do you have support for like custom tokens?
Yes. In addition to the geometry tokens we've got there, you can reference a wiki image you've uploaded. In principle, you can access any image on the internet. A lot of sites will get kind of fussy if you're cross-linking like that. So probably the best thing is to do is load it up to the wiki and use it locally.
Yeah.
Or load it up to a server you yourself control.
Yeah.
We need some examples of wiki tokens, don't we?
I'm going to change mine right now. Someone keeps updating the map. Hang on. There's a glitch where if I don't save quickly enough, I lose the edit.
You can also go to the units page.
I might do that if this fails one more time. I have to go to the units page because I actually think I know exactly what's happening.
The camera updates are probably causing it.
Yeah. It's over here. So if you're a GM, you have all of the complex, unhelpful, you can change everything all the time, have all the buttons and features on a special page that you get to see. We figure if you're a GM, you might be old enough to ride this ride. And if you're not, then you run away from that page, you never do it again. So that should have set my icon. Let's see if it did. Where am I? So I'm gonna click that B Stern button to find out where I am. And it looks like it didn't. Let's see what happened. It set it to the wrong thing. This is that bug I told you about, Jeff, where it clears the setting.
Needless to say, it's software, so there are always bugs. I actually noticed that Melkor didn't have full edit access to his unit, so I just added that.
All right, let me see. Aha, I do.
This actually is probably an example of why you have to be careful about how complex you make options. I changed Melcor's permissions, and certain things didn't propagate through that should have. And this is why we kind of hesitate at adding too many options in terms of customization. Because it kind of explodes geometrically in terms of all the special cases that have to be tracked.
Oh, there's something wrong with this world where it's not actually letting me load the image.
Is this the Kunung?
I just made a new unit and tried to give him a URL image. I think it's something about the world setting.
No, it shouldn't be. The world setting shouldn't have any effect. Was it a world or a wiki?
It was URL on a different server.
We haven't tested that in a while. I wonder if we've broken that.
We did. Anyhow, that's an awesome demo. Yes, in theory, you can use any art you like for a token. We recommend very simple art, because if you think about how math normally works, you're zoomed out pretty far. So if you go grab that 600 by 600 picture of a dragon from Paizo's bestiary and paste it on top of a large token, it's going to look terrible when you're zoomed out.
Actually, part of the reason we migrated to geometry tokens is that as you zoom out, any sort of complex art gets really hard to read. Sure. Yeah,
this will work.
Oh, you got rid of the unit you created, Ben.
I did.
Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to set my unit to a wiki icon.
Okay.
Because we have a couple wikis icons handy.
Can make that one work.
Definitely should have recorded that work? Video.
Yes, I became a boat. Let me move you onto a piece of white so you can see.
There you are. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Excellent. I'm going
to
circle.
So that's an SVG graphic we happen to have in the wiki. If I get a lot of feedback of people saying, hey, I want to have SVG uploads, I will prioritize that sanitation process so that we can get fancier graphics in.
Also change how big a unit is. I just made Jeff's unit larger because boats are comparatively big.
You can also change the facing of that.
Oh, that's true.
The D&D games we play a lot don't tend to have facing issues, but Ben and I are trying to edit the unit simultaneously, and it's getting comical.
Hilarious result if you do that kind of thing. This is one of the reasons why we don't actually allow more than 2 GMs in a given world right now, unless you come to us with a special request, because too many cooks spoil the broth.
Yeah, you can in fact have multiple GMs. By default, I kind of work under the assumption that most people are only going to want themselves.
Maybe sometimes one helper.
Yeah.
It's one of the upgrades we get is if you buy a premium account, you can delegate some of the gemming to another player if you have an especially large game. One of our friends plays a game, or used to play a game, that had a dozen players. And I tried that once for about 6 months, and it was exhausting. And he did it all by himself, but I needed a co-GM.
So, any more questions? Yes, that is a Lego Gandalf and a Lego Saruman are on my map.
I just slipped over and saw that too.
I'm too busy trying to mess with the tokens. It's too much fun. Stop making it fun.
Oh, no. That's great. That's what we want to hear. Yeah. And we would love to get feedback. I've recently put a lot of effort into trying to make adding players to your game less painful. This was one of the cases where adding all the fine grained control really blows up badly. So right now, hopefully the most common use case of you create a world and you want players to play, will be relatively straightforward. I mean, you create a world, you give your friends a link to the map, which is like the URL. Like if you wanted to, somebody wanted to join Techniga, you could just give them a link to the current URL. They need to log in, but once they've logged in, you can use that green eyeball, which, you know, if you're the GM, you'll have the option of adding them as players instead of just read-only watchers. So Melkor seems to have broken his icon.
Yes, yeah, so his is a wiki icon, and his wiki doesn't exist in this world. So,
he's using his wiki,
and his wiki can't be reached from here with our wiki shortcut. So Melkor has discovered that a lot of our links, the camera auto-completion link, the wiki auto-completion link, assume you mean the current world, not some other world you may happen to have. Quite honestly, that's a use case we didn't think of.
We probably should. It's one of those cases where, though, the danger is it could get very complex.
What we should do is auto-expand wiki URLs to be regular URLs.
There is a regular URL for your wiki page, so it is possible to make it work now. But again, it's kind of like a case of it's possible but hard. Melkor, would you like me to wait, is that not working?
I figured it out.
There you go.
You can't put a secure link in there. You can't do an HTTPS. Oh my God. I've got it.
That's the friggin' problem.
Wait, you can't do an HTTPS.
You can't do a secure link in there, yeah.
Oh, well, Ben, go hop on GitHub and create an issue for that one.
I'm gonna make an issue for that. That is dingbatty of us. I will fix that. That will be fixed in the next release. Thank you, Melkor.
I will note at the moment we're on the camera feed, we're seeing one of the challenges you get using a camera is the sun has I'm in Seattle, so the sun is just setting, it is now full on to about, you know, the kind of the 1/3 size and is completely washed out the entire image.
Yeah, see that. I mean, it's neat though, because I mean it still retains, you know, where the map is, but yeah, I mean, you've got some Lego guys on there, and they're kind of whitewashed out. You can't quite see them.
Yeah, I would have to. I'd basically have to drop the blinds a bit more to make this usable in a real game.
The other fun feature is if you hover over a unit that has a complicated graphic like Melkor's, you get this pop-up that shows in a little more detail. What we actually want to do, talking of integrating the wiki, is show a short version of a wiki page with the same name as the unit. So if Melkor had a wiki page in this world called Melkor, even if he did right now, it wouldn't work because we haven't finished it yet. But our plan is that instead of just showing a big version of his icon, it would show whatever he put at the top of his wiki page, which will probably be a picture of his unit and, you know, some critical stats like his initiative or his stealth or his, you know, whatever he wanted everybody to be able to see very quickly. But right now we've just got that pop-up to give a little more detail. Sometimes that helps if you are using complicated art and players don't quite know what it is, but they hover over it. You get this.
It doesn't work with
units like the Lego figs that don't have a token. Go ahead.
Yeah, Ben just recently added the hover image, so it's more usable now to have relatively complicated icons. One thing I've noticed GMing on this is it is now possible to run combats that start, you know, 500 feet apart, which changes the game a fair bit.
A lot of D20 games don't like it when you do that. The game behaves differently.
Yeah. Nothing overpowers wizards than starting combat out quarter mile apart, because they can get off a whole bunch of long-ranged spells before the melee fighters have anything to do at all.
Even if I have a longbow in Pathfinder, which has this, you know, fairly long range, I'm not hitting anything.
Bowfighters, we haven't had many people play bowfighters in our campaign, so we haven't seen it. But, you know, the missile weapon fighters would have a huge advantage. I mean, they get several rounds of full attacks off.
Before anyone can close with them. Yeah, I agree.
Before anything, which it kind of matches, you know, kind of maps, you know, if you look at the development, once firearms became really effective, melee fighting basically dropped out of combat and warfare completely.
Ignoring whether, you know, in Pathfinder 1, you play with the gunslinger or not, you know, the Pathfinder game assumes you get to close with the monster within a round or two. And it is atypical that you get 10 rounds to sneak up on it or cast spells or...
Yeah, I mean, a wizard in the game is really basically amounts to a modern infantryman. Right. They've got grenades. They've got the essentially a rifle. A moderate level, I think a moderate level wizard and Pathfinder, you know, their fireballs have like a quarter mile range. I mean, that's modern infantry fighters.
So I'm going to warn you guys, as we started right at 9 o'clock, we're going to end right at 10 o'clock. Just kind of the thing we do. So we've got 5 minutes.
Okay. Questions from the audience, please.
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was going to say just, you know, anything you want to fit in, anything you want to fit in the last couple of minutes here, just let us know.
You can support us on Patreon. If you support us on,
you can buy a premium account and get an upgraded world with all kinds of fun things like more players or a bigger map or more GMs to help you play. Or you can just join and sign up as a free player, build a map, play around, show it to your friends, give us feedback, tell us what you like, tell us what you hate.
I mean,
good.
I was just thinking, is one thing I'm currently turning my head over is moving units from a world to a world or from a map to map is a bit clunky. So that's probably the next thing I'm going to be grinding on simplifying.
So we've got an idea there where you're basically going to go through a special kind of unit that warps you to another map, sort of like a teleportation door in some of the video games kind of thing.
I will say
that would be something the GM would drop. Is a GM says, "Oh, I want my players to be able to move themselves to this map," so they'd put a portal to that map.
Yeah, this is something that's impressed me with you guys and the software in general is that from the beginning. I mean, you guys are taking an outside point of view. You're like, okay, what do we want? And a VTT, you're not comparing it to anything. And then you're turning around and saying, "Hey, what do you guys want? Tell us what you want. We'll put it in here." You know, you guys are listening to players, you know, people are coming in now. It's, you know, a couple of bugs here and there. And I mean, you're basically just listening to your players and putting in what people are asking for, as opposed to just putting in a whole bunch of stuff that no one's ever going to use.
Thank you very much. We really do want people to use what we have. And I don't want to spend 6 months on this awesome, new, really cool way of making your unit change colors when you're not looking at it. Who cares?
Yeah, I have to say that is why I personally have not put much emphasis on vision blocking and the line of sight stuff.
I think you've proven right here with the sunset that you can make your own. people can't see this, but the sun is setting, so the whole map is getting bleached out here. So, I mean, with a cleverly positioned flashlight and some cardboard.
Well, I think, you know, in another 10 minutes or so, the sun is going to be completely on the... on the map, and then the webcam is going to readjust its light level and everything should be visible again.
Right. You can do vision blocking by just turning off all the lights and closing your blinds.
I think that the AR though, I think to me sticks out as the best feature that you guys have that I've not seen anywhere else, nor have I heard anyone planning on implementing anything like this. And it really puts it back into this perspective of people are playing a tabletop game remotely, like you said, as opposed to playing a video game, you know.
Right. Really, oh, that reminds me a question about putting maps in that somebody had. Part of the you know, the perspective correction I have here. I mean, one thing you can do is the camera page allows you to just extract a still and do the correction. So you can set up a map on your table and then extract a still into the wiki and use that as a background instead of doing a feed. We had a friend do that once where he created several maps with, you know, very nice game tiles. And then he just uploaded them that way. I'm going to be adding a feature where you can take a picture with like your phone camera of the map you're interested in. And then you can use the same mechanism to extract and basically get it all to line up Basically, if you have a map with borders that are not really convenient to it, you basically extract the map out of a still image from the wiki into a new page.
So is it easy enough to set up a camera feed and take a still shot? And then, 5 minutes later, you want to add something in there and take another still shot. Is that something that's simple enough to do? Or is that more of taking a picture?
I think so.